Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 81, Pat Kelly. You know, Pat has been a long-time seller, mostly wholesale. And interestingly, most of her wholesale was designed to sell on eBay way back in the day. And we spent quite a bit of time talking about that, how that all worked and how she was able to find accounts and things like that. And I think it's really interesting, very relevant to selling today. And I think that foundation that has given her so much success can be replicated. And I think it's a great story. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And tonight's guest, I'm really excited. I just recently was able to spend some time with her in Vegas. And I must admit, they throw one heck of a party. I must admit, the view from this penthouse, and it was a penthouse, was incredible. And I'm sure they did it all for me. I just can't imagine it was for any other reason. Welcome, Pat Rich. Welcome, Pat.
Thank you. And it was great having you and your wife at the party. We had a fantastic time.
But it wasn't all for me, was it?
About 48 other people.
Yeah. There was a great crowd, and a great crowd of people that I had not met. There were two people that really kept my interest and just blew me away. I mean, just absolutely blew me away. And, you know, that's what I love about these things. When you can sit there and spend that much time with somebody who's also interested in e-commerce as much as I am, that's a big deal. And to sit there, my eyes just got bigger and bigger. I'm like, oh my gosh, it was a mother and a son. I think you know who I'm talking about. Just blow my mind. We had a wonderful time, and I really appreciate you having us there.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you could make it.
So we were in Vegas for a wholesale, a trade show. And so you are an expert in that. And before I get there, I want to go back and let's talk about Pat, the e-commerce seller. What were you doing before you started in e-commerce?
Well, I was in accounting. I was a staff accountant. And while I was working my 50 to 60 hours a week, I was also selling on eBay. And eBay was more of a hobby. It started as, you know, getting rid of things around the house. And this was in 99. And by 2001, I kind of said, you know, I can't grow the eBay business anymore and continue working. So I quit my job and did eBay full time.
Let me ask a question there about that. So, I mean, were you at the same level of income in your eBay business at that point or getting close to what you were making as a staff accountant?
I was at the point where I had no more hours in a day.
Okay, it was driving. It was one or the other, and clearly your love seemed to drive to the right. Because it's unusual for accountants to be, you know, to be these entrepreneurial types too. So you're special.
I knew I could make as much money on eBay as I was as a staff accountant. I had reinvested all the money that I'd been earning over the years, whether in product or had the cash on hand. So I knew I could, if I made the jump and quit my full-time accounting job, that I could still have the income I was having. Well, I knew I wasn't going to immediately have what I was making at accounting and at eBay, but that was okay. I knew I could survive on that, and you know, life would still be good.
So, did you have, you know, I think about that because that's a big issue for a lot of people. You hear that from all the people that you met too. What interests me is, did you have a pipeline that you were filled as much as you could physically do in the limited hours you could give eBay, and then you started to gain a backlog of product that needed to go on, and what you needed was more time? Is that kind of what makes sense?
That's absolutely what happened, because I then got in the mindset of buy it all. I was already in the mindset of, if you're in a store and you see a fantastic deal, you have to buy it all. So I would go to, I happened to walk in JCPenney's one President Day weekend. This was like one of my first huge hauls. my car was so packed I had to go back and fill it up a second time with stuff I already bought. I came home and had piles all over my house sorting. This was men's clothing, and sorting it by you know, these shirts are all the same, those pants are all the same. But when they were only like $2.75 for brand new big and tall men's shirts, how could I not buy them all? I didn't buy them all, only because I already had two carloads.
And so this was eBay, though. So this is you taking the pictures, you measuring, you creating the listing, and you doing all that thing. Yeah. But you're also doing a vending machine style, meaning that you're doing one listing and you had a quantity of four or six or what have you.
And that was the nice thing about clothing, is because I would have, you know, four, five, six different sizes of the exact same thing. So I could take one picture and have six different listings in no time.
It's like a vending machine in essence, really it is. And that part I really love about eBay, because once you're done once, it's very easy. And so at that point, you're just selling on eBay. Did you, you know, let's answer this question, because I'm sure people are thinking it. So you had an income from the job, and you had an income from eBay. You add the two together, they equal X. You said that you weren't going to get to X. You knew that at the beginning. How long did it take till you got to X? Or did you never?
Well, it took me a couple years to get to X.
Okay.
But in all reality, had I stayed at accounting, that X would have increased.
Because you would have, if you could have kept up the pace, though.
Yeah.
And see, that's, you know, at some point, you know, you're working, you know, 40, 50 hours in the job, and you're giving eBay, say, 20 hours, right? And that's 70 hours a week. Could you have kept that up for 2 years and keep the level of interest? I don't know. I mean, it gets hard after a period of time.
Well,
you do get tired.
I mean, I was doing it from 99 till, I think it was 2001 when I quit my job.
That's a long time. So, yeah, and the other thing is, if you would have given up on the eBay, your staff accountant job, you would have had a normal raise or what have you every year, but nowhere near would you have gotten to X in that job alone, correct?
Right, right.
Okay, the potential.
It would have taken much more time.
Right. Do you look back at those times now and regret it, or are you saying, thank goodness I had the nerve to take and make that jump?
Oh, no, I never look back and regret it. I never look back and regret it. The only issue comes up is I was lucky at the time. My husband carried the health insurance, and so I didn't have to worry about that. You know, I had two kids at home. Now, all these years later, where it's just me and, you know, you got the whole health insurance in the picture, it's a different story. I don't know if I could jump so easily now.
Would your advice be to people, you know, knowing what you know now, and if they have a job, I guess if it's their love, they should, you know, stay with it. What would be your advice to people who are sitting here in the same boat? They're running as hard as they can in their side business or side hustle, I like to call it, whether it be eBay or Amazon or Etsy or even their own site, and working a job that, you know, I mean, it's different in corporate America today. It's so different than what it used to be in our generation. What's your advice today?
Well, I say if you want to do it, jump in and do it. Make yourself a schedule, and you got to work it just like it was any other job. You can't say, I don't feel like doing it today and sit on the couch and watch TV. It's more work. It's a 24-hour-a-day job. And I don't care if you go to the grocery store, you have to be working, because you never know when you're going to find the deal, especially if you're into retail, or, you know, you just don't know what's out there if you don't always look.
I think that's smart. And so for those who are thinking, oh, man, I want the life where I'm going to be sitting on a beach drinking Mai Tais all day, this isn't the immediate part of this business is not going to get you there. Fair?
Well, that depends. If you do wholesale, you can get there. Because now there are prep centers all over. There are companies like Cole Imports that will do all the work for you. So you can sit on the beach and make that phone call and say, I want this, this, and this, and never touch the product, never have to deal with it, you're going to ultimately have a lower return on your investment because of the fact you're paying someone else to do the work. But, you know, you can still do it. You can still do it from that, you know, lawn chair at the beach.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I was offered today a deal on books. And the premise was that they would source it, they would package it, and they would ship it for me. Never touch it. And I would pay for that service and pay a little bit of a premium, obviously. I'm like, I'm in. I was like, oh, okay. That was a really easy decision. I will never touch the product. So in essence, I have a silent employee out there sourcing for me, right?
Yeah.
And so this has never been easier. I mean, it wasn't that way, you know, a few years ago, right? There was maybe one or two fulfillment services. Now, I mean, I can count 20 of them on the top of my fingers.
Well, and there's okay. A bunch out there that are not – that don't sell themselves as Amazon. See, and even years ago, there were prep centers that don't sell themselves as Amazon prep centers. You know, there's fulfillment centers, you know, for all kinds of websites out there. And they've been there, but in our little Amazon world, we don't necessarily go into those because we didn't ever really see them as an option, but they're there and they're a very liable, you know, option because they'll do the same thing all these prep centers will do. And, you know, they're just as competitive pricing wise.
Well, they're called, I believe, logistics centers, right? And I know one that's not too far from me. I bought toys from a vendor, and I went to this place in the middle of nowhere, and they have they represent 26 companies or 27 companies, and they handle all the backroom accounting, all the order taking, all the payment processing, all the shipping, and all that stuff, customer service. And I was blown away. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, in the middle of nowhere, but they handle all these companies, and some of these companies are from New York City, cosmetics and things like that. So I am familiar with it, and it is substantial. How many of these companies don't have their own warehouse and their own distribution wing?
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to take a break, and then I want to talk about you getting into Amazon, and you kind of hinted a little bit about wholesale. Pat's an expert on wholesale, everyone. This is going to be a good one. Let's take a quick break.
All right, it's early in 2016. You just came off a slamming fourth quarter 2015. You're sitting on a boatload of cash, and you're thinking, I want to do something for my business. I want to grow. Start looking at it in foundation. Look at them as building blocks. Build, build, build. Change your categories. Think about gated categories, specifically shoes and clothing. YourSourcedInventory.com, that's what they focus on. You'll get a list every single day of the week, Monday through Friday, and they're going to give you leads for about 10 items that are in the shoes and clothing, and even dipping into the sports and outdoor category, which is great. These are all gated categories. Listen to some of these ranks. In October, the average shoe rank was $7,571 for $29 profit, a return of investment of 88%. December, 11,000 ranking, profit of $32, 83% ROI. Think about that. Profit of $32. What's your average selling price? Imagine what your average selling price would jump to. In clothing, ranking in October, $6,800, profit of $1,488. But listen to this, ROI of 109%. What could you do to get that 109% return? You got to join YourSourcedInventory.com. We use it as foundational in our business. We think you should too. YourSourcedInventory.com. Okay, so things are going to get a little different here. I've had many experts in wholesale, which I quite frankly believe is the way to go, either wholesale or private label. And Pat Rich has a different approach. And quite frankly, I really like her approach because she doesn't worry about a lot of competition because she's bringing it to market. Now, there's more work. But when you're used to creating listings on eBay, it's really not that much different to create a listing on Amazon. A little more rigid, a little more information, but eBay is catching up with that. You know, they're requiring a lot of stuff. They're requiring UPCs. They're requiring some of that data. Amazon, once you have it, You control it. So there's a lot of value in owning that listing. And so we go into some examples, and I think there's a lot to learn here, and I think it's really can be replicated if you're into the trade show business. Great stuff, great information, very easy to implement. Let's get back into the podcast.
All right, we're back, and we're talking with Pat Rich, and we're talking about, I guess we got into the place where you kind of hinted about moving into Amazon and eventually into wholesale. But at this point in the story, you're hitting it pretty heavy in eBay. You replaced your full-time job with your eBay sales. And you were clothing. Is that pretty much what you stayed in? Was that your forte?
Yes, I sold on eBay men's, women's clothing. That's
okay.
That was what I did.
Not shoes, but just clothes, or did you dabble in shoes too?
Nope, just clothes, formal dresses, plus size women's clothes.
So you must have had a house full of clothing.
Oh yes.
Racks everywhere.
Yes, racks and bins and oh yes.
Oh boy. Okay, so and it was all new. You weren't in the used clothing business at that point, or were
no,
you a little bit?
No, it was all okay. Brand new, all retail arbitrage. But well, no, it wasn't even all retail because while I still sold on eBay, I was still. That's when I first started buying wholesale.
Well, how did you get to that place buying wholesale? How did that come about?
I went to a big and tall men's clothing trade show.
Oh.
And that's where it all began.
Is that the light bulb go on? I mean, is that the moment you said, this is easier than going to JCPenney because you can pick and choose what you want and get as many as you want?
Well, this particular show was in Tennessee. I want to say Memphis, but I could be wrong. Anyways, it's a small show. I mean, there maybe was 50 vendors, maybe, and they had all this stuff, like every night. The show was like for 3 days, and every night there was something going on. And one night it was a barbecue at some famous, like, opera playhouse kind of thing. And I happened to sit at a table with some people that manufacture big and tall men's jeans. And we got in a conversation, and they never sold to anyone who only sold online. By this time, I also had eCrater stores, so I was not just doing eBay.
And what year would this have been, just for context?
When?
Yeah, what year?
I want to say it was 2005.
2005. Wow.
Yeah.
That's something. Okay, so you sat there and you talked with them.
So
I mean, interrupt you. I just wanted to get that context because I don't think people can realize that's 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's a lifetime in e-commerce.
So, yeah, I was talking to them, because the problem with clothing is, you know, they may have 5 different styles of jeans, but there are literally hundreds of items because you got, you know, size 30 waist with the 30 inseam. You got size 30 waist with the 32 inseam and so on and so forth. By the time you had one of each, you're looking at 100 items.
No kidding.
And by the time you pay to have them shipped to you, because jeans, especially in big and tall men's, are not light, you know, and so we got in this conversation about having them drop ship. And they were used to sending out for their brick and mortar stores, you know, if they had a customer come in and they didn't have the size, they'd make a phone call and, you know, they'd send it directly to the customer. So they were used to doing that anyways. So that was my first wholesale relationship. But I'll tell you, my biggest shock was sticker shock. I was buying from retail arbitrage, from clearance rack, T-shirts for $2.75 the most. And the company happened to be at this trade show, and their wholesale price was 3 times what I was buying them for.
It's incredible.
So I was like, oh my God, this is major sticker shock, because I knew I was getting a good buy, when you're paying 90% off of retail, you're always getting a good buy. But I never realized how much of a good buy until then, because these were the exact same. I was comparing apples to apples, you know?
Wow.
And yeah, I was like, oh my God, you're kidding. I can't pay that. Not and make any money, you know?
And, you know, that's one of the criticisms of wholesale is that the returns are not as strong as they are off of a clearance item or a super, you know, discounted sale with, you know, gift cards and, you know, cash back and all that kind of jazz. And that's true.
Well, but it's not true.
Oh, okay.
Because I can tell you this. Now, in clothing, yeah, I mean, I can't buy it wholesale for $10 and turn around and sell it for $100. That's kind of unrealistic in clothing. But we buy plenty of items that I'll pay $4 for and sell it for $49. And that
in what category would that
be?
Well, give me a category that would be a generic one. Would that
be
home and improvement? Okay, home improvement. And so is it because the market's inefficient and Amazon's not carrying? Because they would never carry something like that they paid for and sell it for $40. Not very often they wouldn't do
it. You know what it is? It's because I'm willing to look for those wholesalers that aren't everywhere.
Okay.
If you say, like, you find a wholesaler that makes drawer knobs, you know, knobs that go on drawers, okay, first of all, you're going to have your best bet is to bundle it because nobody wants just one knob, you know, and one knob isn't going to make you money in the first place. So you bundle them. You do your 12s or your 16s or whatever you feel comfortable with, and you bundle them together. Now, most people will just pass that up, especially, number one, if they didn't find the guy online. And that's my favorite way to find wholesalers that aren't online. But if you find a product that isn't already on Amazon, you get to make up the prices. And that's where so many people go wrong, because they're just wanting to sell what's already there. And then they kind of follow the pack.
It's really well put. And so how hard is it to add a brand new product that's already exists? So drawer knobs exist on Amazon. Let's just call it what it is. They're brass drawer knobs on Amazon. Lots of them.
Right.
So we know that they're there, and you can look at them and you can see that there's a pattern that they sell. So that's a viable product. So you're saying, hey, let's create a listing for brand new Steve's doorknobs, right? And we're going to do them in bundles of 12 because that seems to be the standard that most people are selling them in. And the retail price listed on Amazon for 12 is $39.99. However, because there's, you know, 22 people on the listing, it's currently selling for, you know, $22.99 or whatever. And that's probably not an unrealistic option. You're going to bring this to market. How difficult is it to bring when you already have another listing you can kind of emulate, right?
Right.
So I mean, is the hassle, because there's a hassle, somewhat of a hassle, right? You got to take pictures. You got to, you know, cut the backgrounds out. You got to create a listing, and then you send them in. And I guess that's the hassle.
You have to do the work once. You have to do the work once. The thing about wholesale is you do the work once, and the rest is a phone call. When I run out of those knobs, I make a phone call. Or when I get down to, you know, only having a third of them left, I make a phone call. Those come back in, boom, I ship them back out, and I never lost any business. I didn't do any more work. It's a continuous selling item until it quits selling.
You know, the light bulb just went off in my head, and you're going to be like, Steve, you're so stupid. You should, of course, this is right. So my friend Andy Slammons has a private label course, and a lot of what he does is based on finding a great product out on Amazon, right, and then finding it and sourcing it in China. Not you know, one that's not, copy or patented, that kind of thing, right? You're describing the same thing, But you're like, Steve, look in trade shows or look locally. You're basically describing the same thing. You're saying, hey, brass doorknobs exist on Amazon and they sell well. So you just source your own small company, like you're saying, ones that don't exist out in the internet. Perfect, right? Because you're now a brand new sales channel for them. And create the listing. You did your own private label, in essence. Even though they're named and it's that company's name, it really is a private label bundle. You agree?
Right, right. I mean, I don't worry about getting exclusives or anything else like that because I find wholesalers that are not in everybody's face, you know? You can't Google it and find them. You probably could, but it's going to take some work. You're not going to find their website and their pictures. So everything you do is takes work. And
it's
most people run from work.
Yeah, every one of those hurdles are like, oh, yeah, I can't do that. Oh, wait, there's another. Oh, I can't put three hurdles together. Forget it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's,
yeah,
it's dead to me, right?
Everybody wants the quick dollar.
Okay, so you're at this dinner and you hear of an opportunity. You're like, hey, drop ship these jeans, right? They're heavy or what have you, right? As you said, they're used to sending a pair to the store for that particular customer. So something went off in your head and you're like, hey, would you do this for me too? And how did you get the information to them? Did you send them and say, hey, Steve Peterson at blah, 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 123 Main Street, ship him a pair with no invoice? Is that how it went?
Well, pretty much. I would send them an email and say, I need you to ship these to so-and-so. Here's the address. And you know, and then it would tell them to charge me and send the invoice to me. And, you know, everything that worked like a charm. That particular company, I never had any problems with. There's only a few companies I would ever drop ship from, but they were a small mom and pop operation themselves. They have since won hundreds of different awards in their category and that kind of thing. And they've grown leaps and bounds. But you know, it's, I still do business with them.
I was going to say, are you still a vendor? Oh, that's incredible. See, that's a great story. 10 years, still a vendor as this business has exploded and changed. That says something that you're still with them.
Yeah. I mean, I can pick up the phone and call Kim right now and it'd be like yesterday, you know?
That's funny. Okay, so this is 2005, you're drop shipping, and you're also shipping continuous on your own, right?
Yes.
Okay, and did you find any other deals at that trade show?
Oh, yeah, I had, I picked up a couple of vendors at that trade show. Like I said, it was small, mm-hmm. and but it was, you know, they made it fun, different things to do every evening kind of thing, but that trade show company went out of business and so then it was okay, now I got to find another trade show. So then I started going to the Half Price show, which is also in Vegas, and that was big compared to what I was used to going to. That was big, but it didn't necessarily have what I was looking for at the time. You know, they had a couple of booths. I mean, there was hundreds and hundreds of vendors, but, you know, you'd stop at each one. Do you sell this? Do you sell this? Do you sell this? And so it was not fun after hearing no, no, no. You know, nobody has what I wanted. So I haven't been to the off-price trade show since, but it's on my list of trade shows to go to again. Since my whole world has changed with Amazon, you know, I don't just sell clothing now. So it makes it a lot different.
Hmm. Well, and I think we can jump to there because, you know, for a few years you continued on eBay and I don't know how long eCreator lasted.
I'm still on eCreator.
Oh, you're still on eCreator. Yeah. So it still is out there and I haven't heard of that and it's been a few years. That's really interesting. So you're fast forward to 2011, is that when you went on?
On Amazon, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
okay.
Back up. 2007, I partnered up with Shelly Gannon, and we were selling earrings that we make. 2011, Amazon came to us, because back then, to sell jewelry, you had to be invited. So the Amazon came to us and said, oh, we want you to sell your earrings. And I was like, no, no, no. These are not Amazon quality. You know, they're, what's the word I want? Costume jewelry, nothing. You know, we were selling them for $7.
Okay.
You know, they're not expensive. So Amazon came to us and said, you know, oh, sell your earrings. Well, we had 1,500 different pairs of earrings in our eCreator store. That is why Amazon came to us.
Oh, so they were mining other stuff. I was wondering how they found you. So they were mining other companies, other sales channels, stores, saying, good fit, good fit, good fit. And probably as they expanded a category, I would imagine, they probably said, okay, let's work on jewelry and let's look for top seller. 1,500 SKUs is a lot of SKUs.
Yes.
And did you have multiples of the same?
Oh, yeah, because we made them ourselves.
So you'd make a limited run of so many of this type?
Well, here was the thing. We sold those on eBay and eCraters and other sites. And, you know, at the time we sold them, if you bought one, we made it. No big deal, you know.
So you didn't have inventory. Pre-made. Okay. So you didn't have inventory sitting there. You made one, took a picture, put it up for sale. That sold, and then when the next one of those sold, then you made a second one.
Right. Right.
So smart.
Well, then what happened was here. Jump to 2011. It's September. Amazon is begging us to sell our jewelry there. I finally give in. I do this whole spreadsheet. Over the weekend, I send it to the guy, and next thing I know, we are live selling 1,500 pairs of earrings.
No kidding. So you uploaded your photos, a flat file, I guess, type back then.
Right.
And put it in, and you have 1,500 live SKUs on Amazon immediately?
Yes.
With no inventory.
With no inventory, exactly.
Now I know where this is going.
Yeah. In September, by this time it's probably October, okay? Now it's fourth quarter. Everybody knows what happens in fourth quarter, and then we're talking to different people, and everybody's saying, "Oh, it's fourth quarter. You got to sell toys. You got to sell toys." So then we thought, okay, we got to sell toys. Well, our earrings were selling, and they were keeping us busy, and now we're out. You know, going retail arbitrage to buy toys. Well, you know, we broke a lot of rules because we didn't know better. You know, you buy a doll. We sent the doll in. We didn't know we had to bag it. You know, it all worked back then. Now,
Chris Green would say that you didn't have to do that back then. You know, he was sending loose tools, he said, you know, so yeah, there weren't the rules that there are today, right? Or they weren't enforced.
Well, I think they were there, you know, because when we'd look back or, you know, even when it was going on, we'd happen to be reading some more of the guidelines and stuff, and it would talk about, you know, no exposed fabric. And it's like, oh, we just sent that whole soft doll in with no bag. Oh, well, next time, you know. And so but the earrings got to be selling so fast, and it was crazy. We would have to put the store on hold.
Wait, so you were making them and shipping them. This was all merchant fulfilled still at that point,
all
correct?
The earrings. When we started doing toys, we started doing the FBA thing with the toys, but not with the earrings.
Wow. And so, I mean, in its heyday, do you any guess how many you'd sell in a week?
Oh, I couldn't begin to guess. All I can remember is in the beginning, we would have to put the store on hold, catch up, get them made, get them shipped out. Then we'd take the store off a hold, and in 2 days, we'd put it back on hold. We'd go, we'd get all these earrings made, get them all shipped out. And it was like this vicious circle. And so we finally decided we can't do this anymore like this. So by January, it was even before then. We just finally made a whole bunch of the ones we knew that sold. And, you know, we made like six of each or whatever. And we, I remember sitting there the first time we were trying to send these in. Oh my God. The first time you do FBA is a nightmare in the first place. Mm-hmm. And to do it with earrings that have no UPCs, no numbers whatsoever, and we're trying to match these tags, and the whole title doesn't show, and oh my God, it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare. But we, you know, you eventually you come up with a system, you make it work, and you, and then it's like, oh my God, I remember when we used to do this, you know.
Yeah, the perseverance, and then the reward from that. It's a very, you know, as you look back, you're like, oh, my, yeah, like you're saying, I can't believe we didn't do this earlier, sooner, right?
Right, right. You learn, you know, that's how you learn.
And I think that that's another, you know, common issue, right? So those hurdles we talked about earlier, right, there are two or three or four, and they're still coming. You've been selling for how many years, and how many hurdles do you still get,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But your ability to say, eh, okay, they want to change that rule. Okay, we'll adapt. We'll put this one in place. We can do this. I think that you build that over time if that foundation is nice and strong. So at that point, are you still selling these earrings and still making these earrings, or did you get out of the earring business?
We still sell the earrings. At one point, jewelry was 49% of our business.
Wow.
It's not anymore. Because it's such a low price point, you know, and as you grow in this business, your greed grows, you know, you look at things differently, your average sale per item kind of thing, how much money you're making. You know, we were, you know, when we started selling the earrings on Amazon, of course, we had to raise the price. And then, of course, you know, Amazon raised their commission from being 20% to being a minimum of $2. Well, when you're selling earrings under $10, you know, that made a big difference.
Sure.
So that, you know, so our earrings that we used to sell for $5.99 on eBay, we now sell for, you know, $10.99 on Amazon, you know. But it took time to get there, and we still sell them to this day, just not nearly as many. Our focus has kind of changed, and we don't personally make them anymore.
I was going to say, did you outsource that?
To make them for us.
That's smart. And are you selling that on multiple channels still?
Yeah.
No, that's so smart. You know, you have described what I would describe as an ROI of your time. You did an ROI of your time, and you said, it's worth more than that. And I think that that's what happens. I'm not sure it's greed as much as the hassle factor again. You know, you sit back and say, is the hassle worth this much? No. So you raise it, or you adjust your and you get out of products. A lot of time you get out of products because, as you said, the price just gets you start to almost make no money, where the return is just so little, that return of investment of time. So you have obviously expanded out of jewelry. What's your main category now, would you say?
I would say our main category is anything we can make money on.
Okay. All right. So you're willing to cross
everything.
All the markets. Okay. So you are out there. And are you 100% wholesale now, or 95%? What would you say?
I would say it. In addition to the earrings that we make, which I consider a wholesale product.
Well, it's almost a private label product in
right.
essence you have made for you,
right.
Really.
And we have other stuff that we have made for us, but I count that all as wholesale just because that's how I look at it. But we're probably about 95% wholesale.
No kidding. And you've been that – I mean, that's pretty much the way you grew up. I mean, as you said, you started in a little bit of retail arb in that, but you've really grown into this wholesale for a long period of time. Would you agree that – while, especially fourth quarter toys, so they're anomalies, because there's real upside, but there's also a race to the bottom. With wholesale, you make reasonably steady returns, much more frequent, right, with a lot less processing, right? So you get to turn that product so many times that while the margins are lower, over time, you make more money. Is that a fair statement?
Except I can't agree with the margins being lower because my margins aren't lower.
Because, again, you're specific. So you're not going let's use a decent, easy example. You're not going to find Legos, let's just say that you could get them wholesale. And you know, if you buy Lego wholesale, just so everybody knows, it's 65%. They're one of the few that, you know, aren't Keystone markup. They're at 65% plus shipping. And if you buy enough, blah, 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 you can get free shipping. But let's just say you're buying them at 65%. If they're selling it full retail, you're barely making any money if Amazon's taking their third, which they about what it is on FBA. You're saying, Steve, I don't source them because A, there's everybody's doing it, and B, it's 65%. You're finding that $4 item that you can sell for $49, and that's what you're suggesting, correct?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and whether they're a big seller or whether they are a small little ma-and-pa operation, it doesn't matter. You could go to your local craft show, and you could find a vendor that, number one, nobody else will have. You don't need to scare them and say, I need an exclusive contract. You can just say, hey, if I wanted to buy 100 of these from you, what kind of price are we working on? You know, tell them what your plan is. You know, sure, you may give them the idea to take it to Amazon and sell it themselves, but at the same time, if you're paying them what they want, they don't, most people like that, they don't want to sell one at a time. If they're if they can sell you 100 and you do all the work to sell those 100, they're happy because they sold 100, they got money from you, and you got to deal with each individual one.
You carry the inventory costs, not them, right? So there's and they don't have the hassle. So walk me through this again. So we're selling coffee cups. I happen to be looking at my coffee cup. And so, you know, you realize that green coffee cups are selling well on Amazon. How do you get the listing? I mean, creating the listing, we understand, right? You're taking the picture. You create the listing, probably very similar to the other one, right? You put in the keywords, merchant words, whatever. And how does that start to move into a selling opportunity, right? Because not everything you do, if you don't put the work into it, is going to sell. So how do you go about it?
We pretty much list it. Shelly, a lot of what she does is she will tweet it, and she uses
Instagram or
not Instagram, but Sweet
Pinterest,
Hootsuite or something.
Oh, Hootsuite, yeah. She could
does
tweet
all
over
the
time,
social
right?
Media kind of stuff.
Okay,
the Pinterest and all that. So she'll pin it and she'll tweet it and she's in a lot of these groups that share tweets. In other words, you know, you put your tweet out there and you put the link, and then all these other people will tweet yours and you tweet theirs in return. You know, so you get a whole lot more audience. And we notice every time we tweet something that, you know, then we sell a bunch of those. So it
it's
does.
Like, it's almost guerrilla marketing, I mean, in essence, right? Because you're not buying time on TV and you're not doing all this crazy stuff. That's really smart. And so you're getting that organic growth from doing that. You're not out buying reviews or any of that kind
no,
of jazz.
No. You know, even with our earrings and stuff, the thing with jewelry is when you list a jewelry, you are creating a listing no matter what. And since that's when we started on Amazon, every listing we did, we had to create because we started in jewelry. And that's how it is. So we were used to making our own listings. We were used to, you know, tweeting it. And, you know, we don't spend anything on advertising. Zip. Never spent a penny. I never give away free items to get reviews or to get people talking about it. It's just never happened. And we have had no problem selling stuff because we created the listing. And so a lot of times I sit there when people talk about having to have reviews on their PL stuff, and I think, really? You know, I've never worried about that. Even listings I make that, you know, we buy from wholesalers, I don't go and pay for reviews or even ask for them. We sell tons and tons of stuff that don't have reviews on it. We sell tons of stuff that have bad reviews on them. It just happens.
Are you the person at the trade show scanning with a scanner everything, or at this point in your life, because you've been doing it so long, you just know when you look at products?
It depends. It depends. If it's something I don't have experience in at all, say like picture frames. You know, I couldn't tell you a diddly squat about picture frames. So I would scan them. Or just to see if they were there. I don't scan as much now as I used to. The first few times I went to ASD, you scan everything, and of course, most of it's not there.
Is that good when it's not there?
In my mind, yes.
Okay, because you had a little bit of an interest in it. You looked at that green coffee cup and said, I've seen things like that sell. That's cute, or whatever your, you know, criteria is. You scanned it, didn't find it. That's not a strike in your mind. That's a check.
I would search green coffee cups and just look at the selling price. Again, because of starting in jewelry, I am never, ever look at sales rank. Because that was not something in jewelry that mattered, okay? So that's not the neighborhood I grew up in. We didn't look at those things. So I would scan it, and I look at the sale price. Because if that green coffee mug is available for $2, and it's going to cost me $2.50 to buy it wholesale, I don't care what the difference is in the mug. I'd pass, because I couldn't sell it for the $15 that I would want, you know.
Looking at it, if it said $15, what does that tell you? A similar mug, not the same one, right? You found one similar and you see them selling for $15. What does that tell you?
That tells me I could sell mine for that or more.
Okay, so it doesn't tell you that they're selling it, right? I mean, let me ask you this. So coffee mugs that are priced at $15, green coffee mugs that are priced at $15, and you see a whole bunch of different ones, is that the market price? Is that what your mind says?
Oh, no. No, mine says I could sell it for at least that amount of money. So if that mug is going to cost me $2, okay, I know I could sell it for at least that $15. But when I list it, I might very well list it at $17.99 and see what happens.
You know, this is counter advice to most everybody else is giving us.
I know.
They're saying, you know, Steve, look, the rank is what drives the decision to buy that coffee mug. Price is secondary. I mean, of course, it has to be profitable, but the rank should drive your decision. You want to be under the 1% rule, right? You want to be in the 1% category. So the top 1% of that category of coffee or kitchen, you want to be in there, and that coffee mug is ranked 100,000. You don't care. You're not looking at that. You're looking at it to say, hey, I'm buying it for two. Are you assuming because it's priced at $15, it's selling?
No.
I'm trying to get that. I'm trying to understand how you know that it will sell.
Than most of the people in this business.
Yeah, but you're having incredible success. So I'm trying to understand, because you're going to teach me a ton right now. Well, you're already teaching me a ton, and I just want to get it because I don't quite get it. I'm not sure everybody else does yet either, because that's not the way we've been trained.
Exactly. The people that talk about this stuff, they, you know, everybody talks about their own experience. And because of my experience starting in jewelry, where there was no sales rank, everything you did was its own listing, I come from a different mindset, you know. And because our stuff that we didn't advertise at all went live on a Monday and we're closing the store by Friday because we can't keep up with the orders, and we did nothing to market it, I don't buy into the whole, you got to buy reviews, you got to give away product, you got to do this. I may not sell as many of that green mug in a day as the guy selling the green, the blue mug that's in the top 1%. But I have 3,800 products out there, so it doesn't matter, because in the whole picture, I'm selling enough in a day to make a very good living.
Yeah. So, again, you're saying, look, Steve, if green mugs are selling on Amazon and they're selling for $15, really, other than, you know, and they're just green mugs. It's not, you know, think of a good name, Yeti mugs, right? These are just green, you know, dinner mugs.
Yeah, generic. Nothing
generic.
Special.
So all it takes to sell just like that is, you know, good pictures, good listing, good keywords, good thing, and then, like you say, some social media fed behind it to start driving sales, and you'll have success. That's what you're saying.
Yes, and you don't even have to be hard on the social media side. Like I said, we never pay. You know, we don't do pay-per-clicks or anything like that. You know, and in the beginning, we didn't do any of that at all. You can go to, you know, Fiverr's and pay somebody to tweet for you, and you can, you know, do all that. We've never done that. You know, we don't focus on selling the product. We focus on getting the product available to be bought. Because if you don't have it listed, there's no way you're selling it.
Well, and that brings up another question and maybe an observation. Maybe this is easy. You know, you're going to be again like Steve, of course, that's dumb. When you create the listing on Amazon, that's no different than creating a listing in eBay or creating one in Bonanza. Matter of fact, Bonanza will partner, or I'm assuming an eCreator. I've not really seen eCreator in a while. So really, are you putting that coffee mug up both on eBay and Amazon, or are you using like a Joe Lister to put it on eBay?
Well, when we do list on eBay, we were using Joe Lister, but we had too many problems. Okay. Just like with Bonanza, we had Bonanza set up to pull in all our Amazon stuff. Mm-hmm. But what was happening was then it would sell on Amazon, and it wouldn't come off of these other sites. And then 2 weeks later, it's selling on the other site. Hmm. And we don't have it anymore.
It's never good.
So we, you know, and it never fails. It would always happen in fourth quarter. So we'd stop all that because there's only so many hours in a day and you can't deal with all these. I get so mad when there's a product that's supposed to do something that doesn't do what it's supposed
to
do.
That's frustrating. Okay, so Pat has written a book, The Ultimate Guide for Online Sellers to Start Buying Wholesale Products for Amazon and eBay. Actually, you and Patrick Maines, and I don't want to downplay Patrick. He was there, and what a nice guy. But where we met was at a trade show, and in the interview prep, we were talking about how valuable trade shows have become. Now, some would argue that, you know, it's inefficient to go to these events because you can just go online and digitally find all these things and just, you know, send out emails and say, hey, send me your stuff. I'm going to run it through Evaluate or one of those softwares that'll take and look up the UPCs. But you're saying, well, that's great, Steve, but that's not really – that's just bringing the herd mentality again, right? You're going with – you're going to find – because everybody can do that. There's no barrier to entry there really, right? It's a little bit of work. When, by getting out and going to an ASD, and I know there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of people there, but you physically put your hand on the product. Is that the primary way now that you find your new products?
Yes.
And would you say – okay, so I'm new to wholesale. what's the best way? I mean, is it both? I mean, do you spend a lot of time online searching, or are you really, really just using the trade show as the majority of your work?
We go to several trade shows a year. ASD, of course, in Las Vegas. We go there twice a year. This year we went from ASD to Chicago to the home show. Totally, totally different kind of trade shows. And I mean, we hit the local ones here. They have gift shows and stuff here. But we go to quite a few trade shows throughout the year. And we don't go to very rarely do we go to a trade show and don't walk out with at least a couple of new vendors.
And a couple of vendors with a couple of SKUs adds up very quickly. It doesn't take but, you know, 2 or 3 years, and all of a sudden you're sitting at a pretty high SKU list, right? I mean, you have a lot of products you're selling.
Right, right.
So, you know, I always describe it, you have to fill that, you know, that funnel, right? You got that funnel and you got to get it full. How long would you say it would take somebody to really get there aggressively, you know, if they're hitting a bunch of trade shows? Because as ASD is so huge, I never even made it all their buildings. I mean, that was that big. How long would it take, do you think? You know, as I say, I found 8 vendors. I'm sure you found that. How long would you say it takes to get a pipeline filled? A couple of years? What's reasonable to expect?
Well, it depends whether you got a niche or whether you're open to anything. It depends if you like to buy from liquidators and closeout people versus a company that has the same product all the time. Personally, I prefer to buy from the company that has the same product all the time.
Right. You set it and forget it, right?
Yeah.
You order
you
more.
Do,
yep.
You do the work up front. And that's it. The rest is a phone call. But, you know, you continue to go to the trade shows so that you can add new lines, so that you can add new stuff. You know, the first thing we do, we go in, we get VIP status at ASD. So we go in on Saturday and we go see all our vendors that we deal with for years now. We place our orders with them on Saturday so that Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we can go see everybody else.
That's when you can go and look, but yet you got your bread and butter already filled. You took advantage of the shipping discounts that are typical at those shows, you know, that kind of thing. And that's all out of the way.
Right.
Do you find, this is probably a relationship question, do you find your existing vendors are a great place to mine new products?
Yeah, yes and no. Most of ours we use to refill. We'll refill, we'll reorder everything we're out of. I go there, you know, I literally run lists and check my inventory in the warehouse and all that good stuff. So that when I'm at ASD, I have all that in front of me and say, okay, I want to reorder these, and what else do you got new?
Okay.
And sometimes then it's like, okay, well, what else do you have that I haven't ordered before that might not be new, but that I've always passed on? Because as the longer you do business with them, say it's the drawer knob people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The longer you do business in that category, the more you learn, the more you know whether the wooden ones sell better than the brass ones, or whether the nickel finish is better than the painted ones, you know. So you may have been passing something up all this time, thinking, oh, nobody, you know, wants that psychedelic looking knob. And then one day you're looking at a magazine and there, my God, there's a dresser with psychedelic colored knobs. And you're going, I got to get those. I think they had those. So then you're interested in new things, you know, or, you know, the same thing, but a new version, you know. So you always got to be paying attention. I mean, I subscribe to, and I don't even really know how this started, but like hardware, it's a hardware magazine. And that's where I learned, you know, what's the newest colors or whatever that people are using, like brass, the nickeled finish is currently the new trend. Everything, you know, it used to be everybody wanted chrome or brass. Now it's the nickel finish. Everything.
And you would have passed them in the past because they weren't hot, right?
Right.
That's your point.
Right.
And you
read these trade magazines, even if you just flip through the pictures, you learn that, oh my God, this is now a hot color. You know, turquoise is the color of the year. You know, where before you might have went, that's turquoise. Nobody likes turquoise.
Nobody likes that, yeah. So do you go to this trade show then with products in mind that you're saying, I'm looking for these? Is that normal for you?
We have in the past.
Okay.
And it drives you nuts because you won't find it.
Well, now you mentioned we. Okay, so you have a partner in your wholesale business?
Yes, Shelly and I are business partners in basically the Amazon business. We partnered up in 2007. We're a multi-member LLC, legit business.
That's a long time. But it must be very rewarding for both of you to go, because you could probably split up, you can cover a lot of territory, or, you know, get two differing opinions. And, you know, I'm sure that you have different skill sets. So, you know, that's in her wheelhouse and this is in my wheelhouse. Would you recommend that for somebody else?
If you're going to partner up, make sure you got everything in writing. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
I mean, we had a business contract since day one. And, you know, that part of it has never been a problem. And when we go to ASD, we have a tendency to stick together. And it's more because one of us might like it and the other might think, no way, you know, I don't want to waste the money on it. But we're pretty good about equaling each other out. And because we don't ever have an empty bank account, you know, we do well enough that there's always money in the bank when we want to buy something. So we never, you know, that's never an issue as far as, you know, we order what we want to order because we don't even think about how much it costs.
Because you've been doing it for so long, you build that funnel is filled,
right?
And you could just keep to go.
Right.
And, you know, and when we talked about your growth, you have modest growth plans this year. Do you feel like that's I know what your answer is going to be. That steady, modest growth allows you to stay consistent and you're not jumping around trying to catch up all the time. I mean, is that why you have that plan to just be, you know, slow and steady and win and win and win?
Pretty much, because the first year we were on Amazon, the first 2 years, it was like, okay, we doubled, and then we doubled again. It was like, you know, so there comes a point, unless you're adding more people, there's only so many hours in a day.
Yeah.
You
right.
know, granted, things have gotten easier because I can just pick up the phone and say, hey, I need, you know, 100 more green coffee cups, and then they come. But at the same time, I'm still looking at adding new stuff. So that new stuff is piling up and has to work, you know, has to be worked, and those listings have to be done. So that's what slows us down. We would have more growth if we did not do all the work ourselves.
Okay.
And
you don't plan on changing that? I mean, you don't want to have this mega warehouse with you know, and three locations and staff everywhere. Is that not your thing?
No, we don't want that. Well, that's like we hired someone in August who was only supposed to work until December. You know, they were supposed to help us get all our Christmas stuff prepped and out the door. And once we got those pellets out the door, that was going to be it. Well, she turned out to be the best worker we could have ever hired. So we literally let her go one day, and 2 hours later we were calling her back. And so she's still there. You know, it works for her because she's got kids, and this way, you know, if she, like, we, the last 2 days we've had snow days here. So she has to stay home. And that's okay because her job is not that pressing that, oh my God, she's not here. You know, what are we going to do? But she does all our bagging, all our detagging, all our bundling. You know, we want this, this, and this to go together. You know, that's all her job now. But we still do all the listings. We still do all the shipments. We, you know, she'll help us with shipments all the time too. But you know, we've got two big orders coming in the door probably next week that are probably going to be about 3 or 4 pallets each. And I'm going, where the hell are we putting them? You know, so either have to stop buying new stuff and or hire somebody else pretty soon.
Okay. So you have quite a backlog of inventory to send in. And
to get listed, yeah.
To get listed. Yeah. Okay. And because you're finding them, you're going to so many trade shows and you're finding new product and it's like, ooh, that's good. That looks good too.
Yeah. And what happens is, oh, you know, then you go to list stuff and some of it's there and you're like, oh, cool. And you get on a roll because all of these other different colored coffee mugs are there. And so they're easy to list. And you put the ones on the side that aren't there that you got a picture and you don't have time to ever get back to them.
I got a whole stack of that sitting in the corner. I know exactly. Or
I got a warehouse like that.
Yeah, I got shoes and sizes aren't available when I got to add them. And it's like, oh, yeah, I'll get to that.
Oh, I'll have to tell you a trick on how to do that.
All right, we'll take that offline. That'll be on. You know, so you did write a book, your co-author, The Learning Wholesale, The Ultimate Guide for Online Seller to Start Buying Wholesale Products for Amazon and eBay. So you are definitely a different style Amazon, just a wholesale teacher. You have a course. You and Patrick have a group. And it's called Wholesale is Easy. And in your mind, is that true?
Yes.
And do you think racing around to 48 targets easy or not?
No.
Okay.
No, because what happens is you get to target number one and, oh, great, they have 10. Then you think, okay, I'll run to target number two. They got one. So that was a waste of gas and time. So you run to the next one and, oh, they only got one. Sure, you can stop and ask somebody and they can tell you who's got the most and all that good stuff. You know, especially like Target and Walmart, they're real good at that. But still, and thrifting is even worse because I'm sorry, I'm not a book person. But even taking books out of the picture, I could go to thrift stores, 20 of them, and I'd be lucky if I found one product that was worth buying, you know? So to me, that's a lot of waste of time. It's a lot of wasted time running from retail store to retail store.
It's definitely inefficient. I mean, there's no question. So what makes your wholesale group different than the other groups that are out there?
Patrick and I, have this whole different philosophy. The group was started so that we could teach you, so that we could teach you how to find a wholesaler. It kind of changed, and we have the people wanted different things, so the group is more of what the people want. So we find a wholesaler, and we will dissect a few of their products and say, this product is worth selling, and this is why. Or this is already on Amazon. It's selling for this amount. Maybe you should bundle it with this other piece, and you could sell it for this amount. Or, okay. You know, and things like that. We just recently were listing toy companies that won't sell to Amazon sellers, which is, you know, kind of different for a wholesale group because we're telling you not to waste your time because they're not going to sell to you. You know, so it's a lot of if you need help getting your resale number license, you know, we'll help you walk you through that for your own state so that you can, you know, buy wholesale. But we kind of have gotten into, you know, we'll take the product and say, okay, here it is. Yes, Amazon is selling it, and they're selling it at this, but if you look, people are buying it with this and this, you know, maybe pair them up. You know, we talk about why. I'm a big believer in going as wide as you can and as shallow as you can until that product has proven itself. You know, there's no...
And how long does that take?
Well, if you order 12 and you send them in and they're all gone... And
that's
then
a clue.
You pick up that phone and you get, you know, 24 more and you send those in and they're all gone. Well, now you can feel comfortable buying a whole bunch more.
Okay, you have a pattern. Hey, I'm looking at your website and it says this group, it's private and exclusive. It's limited to 54 members, period.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
So per month. And it says here, and it says you'll give out wholesaler names. So you're saying, hey, Steve, here's coffee mug supplier X. But you're giving it out to all 54 members, right? And so how many of those 54 members take action on that coffee mug, right? Because you're giving out multiple different ones at that point. And do they choose the coffee mug because that company might have 50 other items or 500 other items, which is more likely, or one that I found at ASD has 3,200 different items. So I guess the premise is that of the 54 – the odds of them all choosing the same coffee mug company and that coffee mug in there is probably infinitesimal, right?
Right. And of those 54, not all of them are into buying coffee mugs.
Oh, okay. So there's different – because you're looking across all different genres?
Right.
Or all,
you know,
different categories?
People are into different things.
Okay.
Some people won't buy things that are glass, you know, because they don't want to deal with the risk of it being broken. You know, some people only buy from companies that will ship to a prep center. You know, so everybody has their own thing. We're saying, you know, if you go to company XYZ, they have this, they have, you know, lots of items, but we're going to talk about this green coffee mug. And, you know, we show them what it's at Amazon right now, if it's already on there. Or, you know, what comparable things are, and, you know, kind of tell them why we would or would not buy that item. And you know, kind of toss out other ideas of what they can bundle it with. One of the things we do in the group is we work with Cole Imports, who offers our members in the group a special discount, not always, but most of the time. We work with one particular guy there that pulls it all together, and they do a lot of things at Cole Imports that is real impressive. They'll bundle stuff for you.
Okay, so they're a prep center.
No, they're a wholesaler.
Oh, they'll do that for you and then send it directly to Amazon for you. Oh, nice. So you're never touching the product.
Never touching it, and never, you know, they're doing all the work for you. I mean, yeah, Cole Imports is a good company. And they have so many thousands and thousands of products that, you know, I don't worry about telling people about Cole Imports because they have so much to offer, you know, and especially if you do bundles. What's the chance of somebody else bundling the same stuff?
Right.
You know, multi-packs is a different story, you know, because a lot of people buy from all of these places like this, and they'll buy cases and sell it as a case.
Right. Or split it into 6, 8, 12,
you know,
whatever the standard is.
And
so how much does it cost?
How much does it cost?
Yeah.
To have coal? Okay. Oh, the group?
Yep.
Oh, our main price is $89.99.
$89.99 a month.
$89.99 a month.
Only 54 members. Are you full?
Are we full? No. We have.
Okay, so you have room.
I'm not sure what. I'd have to look.
That's fine. As long as there's an opening or two.
Yeah.
Okay, so for $89.99, what do I get?
You get up to 5 wholesalers in the month. We will list 5 different wholesalers for you to contact, you know, see about getting their products, see if it's a good fit for you. I mean, it's a good, you know, just because it's a good fit for us and we like it does not mean that you will like it. You know what I'm saying?
But they've been vetted, right? So they've already been vetted. They accept Amazon sellers. They have products that sell because somebody you know is using them or you guys are using them yourself. So those hurdles are already taken out for you.
Yes, but I'll be, in all honesty, what we've run into is after we'll tell people that, you know, this particular vendor sells to Amazon sellers, something internally with that company changes.
Okay.
And this has happened now a couple of times. But, you know, we list companies that we, when we contacted them, they tell us, yes, you know, we'll sell to you.
So how many times out of the 60 of last year did it happen? Two, three?
Oh, that they changed their mind?
Yeah.
One distributor that had a whole bunch of different wholesalers.
Okay.
So basically once, but multiple manufacturers.
Okay. So it's not prevalent. I mean, it does happen, and it happens at everywhere. Or, hey, we got enough. You know, we only want to have 30 wholesalers or 30 Amazon sellers. We don't want to have any more just because, especially with logistics and things. Okay, so for $89, I get that. It's a private Facebook group, I take it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and so but I can ask questions. I can say, hey, you know, I'm trying to do my first pallet shipment or whatever. I need help with this. Is that the kind of help I can get?
Exactly. Any question you want to know, if we don't know the answer, we'll try to direct you to someone who will. Especially like pellet shipping. A lot of people haven't pellet shipped. And I know the first time I was trying to ship a pellet, I was digging all over the place and could not find the answers. Or you'd find a little bit here and a little bit there. And it was kind of winging it. But, you know, once you get through it, it's like, oh, that's not as bad as I thought it would be, you know?
Okay. And do you... you know, I'm sitting here thinking about, would you recommend somebody brand new to selling, never sold on Amazon before? Or is this course more suited for somebody who's been doing retail art for a bit, got through the, here's how a box gets packed, here's how you put a label on and that. Now they're getting tired of running store to store. Which is the better scenario?
This group is for someone, they don't have to sell on Amazon. They can sell anywhere. They can have a brick and mortar for that matter.
Oh, okay. Wow.
But it's we use Amazon because that's our world, you know. It's because the people are intimidated, I guess is the word. You know, they just feel lost. They don't know where to start. They know they want to buy wholesale, but where do they go?
Mm.
And that's what the group is about. We want to teach you where to go. We hand deliver up to 5 wholesalers a month to you, but our goal is to teach you where to find them. So that way, eventually, you can say, I can do this on my own.
And they drop out of the group. You lose them. So you're eliminating your own customers, but out of for the right reasons. You want them to become self-sufficient and on their own. Yeah.
And then when somebody starts asking them, well, how did you find the retailer? Hopefully they'll say, or how'd you find the wholesaler? Hopefully they'll say, oh, I was in this group. Join this group, you know?
Okay. Take my place.
That's our model.
I like it. Okay. Well, I think we've got it. I think what I do like about it is that it is focused on helping you get started quickly, right? Because, again, you're saying as long as you know what to do a little bit on Amazon, you can quickly get a wholesaler because we're going to give you up to 5 this month. And generally, those 5 will sell to you. Now, you got to figure out the product. You got to do different things. But we're here to help, and I imagine they could run a product by you saying, Pat, what do you think of this? This is what I'm thinking about doing. Your experience would be it would help. I mean, is that the kind of advice I can get there too?
Right, and they can post it right in the group, or they could send Patrick or I a private message if they don't want to, you know, give the specifics to the whole group, that's fine, you know.
Very cool. All right. So what's the best way to get in touch with you? And I'm going to have links for your book, and I'm going to have links for your wholesaleiseasy.com. That's the website, so it's pretty easy. It's wholesaleiseasy.com, and there's the information for signing up, and contact information is there. So that's available to you. And again, like I said, I'll have the link for your book. What's the best way they could get in touch with you if they have another question?
They can message me on Facebook.
Okay.
Under Pat Rich. And my profile picture says wholesale is easy, so you'll know you got the right one.
Okay.
And yeah.
Okay, well, you know the goal of this podcast is to help people move past the point of stuck. And I'm guaranteeing you people who are listening to this saying, wholesale is easy. I haven't had easy with anything in a while. I might check it out. So that's obviously one way to do it. But can you give us a tip or trick that we can put into our business today or tomorrow to help us move the business forward?
Organization.
Mm.
The more you understand the business, the better organized you can be. One thing with FBA is and I'm sure everybody does it different, but when we first started doing our first shipments, it was like we had no idea how the labels were going to print. We don't have a Dymo printer. We don't waste money. So if it's not necessary, we don't have it. We have a printer. We print our labels 30 up. But we've come up with a system, and that's what it's all about. As an item sells and I pull more to send in, they go in order by RSKU, because we found that when we print the 30 up labels, although they don't have the SKU on them, they print in SKU order. So this way they're all in order. And we print our labels by warehouse because Amazon likes to send things to 7 different places. So I'll print warehouse A and go and literally pull the item, stick the label on it, throw it in the shopping cart. Next, you know, and we do all of the warehouses before we box anything up, because that way if we get to the end and we have an extra label, or we've got a label for a green coffee mug and we only have a purple coffee mug, well, we know we screwed up somewhere and we can still get to everything. Learning your own system would be my biggest tip, because that's what's going to save you the hair on your head, because otherwise you go crazy. And once you come up with a system that works for you, that's what it's all about.
That makes perfect sense. And you can't scale until you have that system in place, because once you get to a level, you have to be efficient, right? You have to have time. And the only way you get that is by being efficient. I love it. I love the advice. I love the sound reasoning. You've counter-taught me today. My mind is saying, but Steve, and you know, and I'm going backwards and I'm like, wait a second, you know, that's not what I learned. And it's, you're really causing me to think. Excellent. I really appreciate it. I can't wait to see you in Vegas again. I just really appreciate you taking the time tonight. I wish you nothing but success.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me. And like you said, you know, the book is available. When we're planning a big party again in August.
It was a good party.
And everybody's welcome, and it's, you know, free to attend. You know, this year we got lucky. I don't know. You know, we had a nice room before the ceiling started leaking and they had to move us to the better room that we had. So
I still believe that room was there for me. You just got to say that. Just keep that. You had that room because you knew I was coming. Okay. Let's just say that.
All right. It was a nice room.
It was a great room.
You couldn't believe.
All right, you have a great night.
You too. Thank you.
So another great interview. You know, you sit back and you think about these things. There are so many approaches to get you to the same place. If you look back at over the 80 some odd I've already interviewed, you know, we've had retail arbitrage people doing millions. We've had online arbitrage doing millions. We've had wholesale doing millions. Here's another approach to wholesale, another method to get through wholesale. So there's really not one way to fit all. Private label doing wholesale, right? So there's not one method to get there. But the common trait is put your head down and do the work. You know, one cool thing about Pat afterwards, she said, oh, Steve, I forgot to mention, I have a free group about trade shows and wholesale. So I'll have that link out there too. Again, these people are willing to share information with you. The difference is they're willing to take action. That's why they're successful. So I really think you sit back, take all this in, figure out which approach is right for you, which group is right for you, and then move forward. Take action. Take care. Thanks for listening. ecommercemomentum.com.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.